Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us. It's a real pleasure to welcome back a guest who has been with us before. He was with us a week ago, had a lovely conversation with Jim Masters. I'm talking about Dr. Antony Amirai-Raj, who is an amazing physician. He's an award-winning clinical care specialist and internist and an assistant professor at NYC Health and Hospitals. He's working hard to transform medicine by analyzing large databases and implementing strategies and providing healthcare solutions by using those databases. He has been honored to work on multiple research projects in India, Australia, and also here in the United States. And he was drawn to medicine to make a difference for critically ill patients. He's dedicated his life to his patients and his medical studies. Dr. Amirai has shown how analyzing data can help save lives. For example, he has learned that you can save South Asians who are genetically predisposed to have heart attacks at a much younger age than their adult counterparts worldwide. And the data analysis shows that statin drugs given at a younger age lower the risk of heart attacks. Early initiation of those drugs lowers the risk of heart attacks in 2 billion South Asians who constitute one-fourth of humanity. That's a pretty remarkable achievement and a success. He also explains that data analysis saves lives in aspects apart from medicine. And he also points out how massive seismic wave data analysis of seismometers detect an imposing or impending earthquake earlier and thus help save the lives of thousands of people riding Japanese bullet trains. He also lets us know that large data analysis is vital to providing early warning and detection strategies while mitigating risk with timely interventions. Big data provides solutions in all fields of science and technology. The doctor has published 34 research articles and conference papers. He's also an attending physician and a clinical assistant professor at New York Medical College, where he treats patients and teaches and mentors medical students. He really is a remarkable physician. He's had a remarkable career, and it's a pleasure to welcome him back to the close-up microphones. Dr. Amirai-Raj, Dr. Antony, as your friends call you, how are you tonight? Welcome aboard. Nice to have you here. How are you doing?
Thank you, Doc, for inviting me to the show. I'm delighted to be in the show, and I'm actually looking forward to have a dynamic discussion with you.
Well, listen, it's a pleasure to welcome you back. You have had such a remarkable career up to this point. I'm wondering if you would be willing to share a little bit of the cultural experiences you've had working first where you went to medical school and where you grew up in India, and then you moved to Australia and spent time there working and studying, and now you're here in the United States. Talk to me a little bit about those are some remarkable experiences, I'm sure. Tell me a little bit about it.
Okay, so I spent the first 27 years of my life in India. Then I spent the next 9 years in Australia. And now for the past 6 years, I'm in the United States. So it has been a splendid journey. I did my schooling, my med school, and my residency in India. India is a large, multicultural, multilingual nation. I spent most of my time in India in the South Indian state of Tamil Nadu. But I also had the opportunity to travel across the length and breadth of the nation. That's when I realized that for every 600 kilometers in India, there is a different language and culture, and that for every 200 kilometers, there is a different dialect within the same language.
Wow.
So India was a diverse country, yes, such a diverse country. And in spite of the multicultural, multilingual nature, I felt that wherever I traveled, there was a common cord connecting the people across India.
Yeah.
Now, back in India, I felt there was a huge focus on learning right from early school age. We were told how privileged we are and to make the best use of the opportunity. Academic learning took precedence over sports and games. We were taught to respect your seniors in workplace, be polite, be nice and considerate to everyone you meet in workplace. And there was a strong emphasis on hierarchy and authority. But when I moved to Australia in 2009, I was surprised by how everyone was calling me as mate. Wherever I went, I was welcomed as saying, "Hi, mate, how are you?" And this
everybody's a mate in Australia.
Yeah. So even by people who I have not met before, and this was a common phrase of greeting in all places, the grocery stores, office places, hospitals, universities, restaurants, public transport, and even by your supervisors and patients. It is such, I became so accustomed to it that now I have started calling everyone in the United States who work with me as mate, and they find it very amusing.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so, you had a question? Yeah.
I was going to ask you the difference in hospitals working as a doctor. Well, the first question, what was it that attracted you to the field of medicine? What made you decide you wanted to be a doctor?
So I was actually a medical student, okay? So, and then I was actually, there were two or three instances I want to let you know. So there was a road traffic accident just in front of my school, okay? And then there was a number of people who were actually injured. It was actually a collision, and people were immediately taken from the injured spot to the hospital nearby. And I was actually witnessing everything, and I was actually following the news, what happened. And then they were given daily updates saying that the patients are doing well. And then I saw them, they got recovered, and they discharged. So now I could see that how people were actually injured critically and how they were actually treated by the doctors. So I felt that the hospital is a place which can actually make a difference in the lives of the people. So that was one instant. The second instant was when my fellow schoolmate, he was doing an experiment in the school, and accidentally he actually, with oil, and he got a fire enlightened. So fire engulfed him, and he developed severe burns. And then he was actually in the hospital for an extended period of time, and subsequently he was saved. And so these two experiences somehow impacted me, and it actually developed the feelings that somehow or other I want to be a doctor. And I didn't know that this particular field of expertise is actually available in emergency medicine and critical care, but all I wanted to do is, like, I wanted to become a doctor. So these were the two instances which actually motivated to be a doctor in the first place.
Well, that's very interesting. Watching somebody burn like that, that must have been terrible. No kidding. But as I started to say, you have studied now, you worked in India, also Australia, and now you've come to the United States. How would you compare being a doctor in the various countries that you've been? Much the same in each country, or is there a big difference? How would you answer that?
No, the thing is, like... No, it's not the same. Okay, so there's a marked difference in each country. So, in the United States, what I felt is that there was pretty much a guideline-based management across the United States. So it was standard guidelines, and it was actually established after years and years of research and analysis. And the guidelines which was actually established in the United States is actually followed as standard treatment among many nations across the world. Even when I was actually in Australia, they frequently used to refer to U.S. guidelines in medical management. Now, in India, there are world-class health centers with advanced medical facilities established in major cities in urban India, which follow guideline-based management as in the United States. However, it is not the same. So it differs from major centers to minor centers. Now, these healthcare centers have offered quality healthcare to people, to not just in India, but across people across the world at a very affordable cost. And this is what has actually led to medical tourism, that patients from developed nations come to India to have the surgeries done earlier. Now, we have also had tier 2 cities, which have also developed quality hospitals, also follow the standard guideline-based management. But however, this is providing this same quality healthcare to rural areas in India, there's been it's been a bit of a challenge, and but there is a massive focus to provide quality healthcare and to connect the rural areas with the major healthcare centers in the cities. And this strategy has actually paid dividends in certain parts of India, and I hope in coming years it will expand all across India, so everybody gets a quality treatment.
Well, that's very important.
Go ahead. Now, when I went to Australia, so difference between Australia and India was actually very minor. Difference between Australia and United States was actually very minor. So both had guidelines-based management. It's just that they had a slightly different guidelines compared to United States. And it just took me some time to accustom that. And when I transitioned from Australia to United States, I didn't feel much of a difference. So it was pretty much the same, except for minor differences, yes.
You know, let me ask you one thing. You seem to me to be a little bit of a different doctor, I'm the son of two doctors, so I know a little bit about the medical profession. I don't know many doctors who study data like you study data to help save lives. Where did this interest in analyzing data and all kinds of data come from? That wasn't part of your medical studies, was it? This is something that you have, you know, got an interest in on your own, right?
Okay, so, yeah, let me answer the question. So doctors are of two types, okay? So there are doctors who actually practice exclusively clinical medicine, and there are also doctors who are called physician scientists. In other words, they are also called research clinicians. Now, the doctors who practice clinical medicine, they take care of exclusively of patients, and the follow the well-being, but their venture into research is actually very limited. However, doctors who are actually working as practicing as physician scientists, what they do is they practice clinical medicine, but they also venture out into research. Now, when they practice clinical medicine, they encounter healthcare problems, and they wanted to find the solutions to healthcare problems, so they venture into research. Now, when they venture into research, there are a lot of research which actually happens at a minor level, at a major level, and which includes clinical trials, database analysis, and also sometimes retrospective studies. So I became interested in large database analysis because by doing a large database analysis, you can see the trends for an entire nation. So you can come up with ideas which are going to affect not just one hospital or one state, but you can see the trends for the entire nation, and then you can actually analyze the data, and you can actually find out who are the high-risk groups, people who are actually affected, and you can actually implement strategies, mitigate risks, and make a difference in the lives of people. And what I felt is that the time which we actually spent in large database analysis was actually the same as what you spend in other types of research. So using the same time, you can analyze more data and come up with better ideas and better solutions. So this is how I actually wanted to, I had the idea of actually venturing out into a large database analysis, finding out solutions and implementing them in clinical medicine so that we can actually find the answers to the healthcare problems.
Well, do you spend a lot of time yourself? I know you're a doctor. You handle patients. You treat patients. But do you spend a lot of time analyzing data, searching for, results that could be achieved by getting an accurate reading on the data in certain areas? Do you do that yourself?
Yeah, so I had to master the techniques of doing the analysis. So recently, actually, in order to master the skills, what happened is I've been involving in research from ever since my first year of my medical student. But I realized that I need to do analysis in a large database. Therefore, I got myself enrolled in a research training program in Harvard Medical School. So where I completed the research training, and I underwent further training to complete national database analysis. And so I never make sure that that my research interferes with my clinical work. So I finish the clinical work every day, And once I finish my clinical work, that's when I start my research work. So it's all outside my working hours. And initially it was actually difficult, but once I learned the techniques, all I have to come up is with codes as to how you use computer codes. I just had to develop the codes, and then I had to have a most advanced computer, and then all I need to do is enter the codes and then enter the data, and then it comes up with analysis. So it took me initially some time to actually master the skills, but once I mastered the skills, it became easier for me.
Well, good for you. This is really kind of unique for a doctor. I know you have success stories that are rather unique, and I wanted to ask you to give me one of your success stories, okay?
Okay. So I'm going to give you a success story, and the reason why I want to share this success story is because I want to share it as an experience so that several of my colleagues across the world also have which was actually experienced by several of my colleagues across the world. So I consider working every day in intensive care unit to be a success story and a day to remember with life-saving activities. But I want to recount a particular intensive care unit experience during the peak wave of COVID pandemic in New York City, when the entire New York City was under lockdown. This success story was an example of great teamwork. And I'm sure that many of my colleagues across the world will have such heroic days in their battle against the COVID pandemic. It was during my second year of my internal medicine residency in the last week of March 2020. COVID cases were surging all across the hospitals in New York City. The intensive care units were the last line of defense in any hospital where we had our sickest patients on life support. Our medical intensive care unit became fully occupied with COVID patients. Therefore, the surgical intensive care unit was converted into an exclusive COVID intensive care unit, which had all the critically ill COVID patients, and most of them were on ventilator. Now, some of my colleagues also became sick from COVID infection and were recuperating at home on sick leave. A new roster was actually made, and I was actually the resident in charge of the COVID ICU.
Okay.
Critically ill COVID patients were deteriorating one after another and were developing life-threatening complications while on ventilator. Now, in intensive care unit, if we have one or two or probably three patients deteriorate and develop life-threatening complications, we can handle it. But when multiple patients deteriorate, then becomes a challenge. Every one of my colleagues, the intensivists, anesthesiologists, residents, fellows, nursing staff, respiratory therapists, did their part in reviving and resuscitating the patients one after another and sometimes simultaneously all through the day with excellent coordination and teamwork. We felt that the situation was unprecedented and overwhelming, but we performed well under pressure. I was able to put all my resuscitation skills, which I learned over the years from my training in anesthesiology, emergency medicine, and internal medicine, into practice on that particular day, which helped me to do my part as a team member efficiently. Towards the end of the day, we were able to revive and resuscitate all the deteriorating patients and stabilize the patients. Now, over the next few days, the situation improved because the effects of lockdown and social distancing measures, which were actually implemented, started to slow down the surging COVID cases, and every other day only became easier to handle. So this was actually a great example of a teamwork. Now, reflecting back, I recalled the words of the father of resuscitation medicine, Dr. Peter Safar, who said that life is very, very precious, especially the life of hearts too young to die. Premature death from trauma or sudden life-threatening condition is an assault to life. Whatever is needed should be performed wherever needed. And I think we did well under pressure in an unprecedented situation. I also realized after that particular experience that a quote which was actually written by a Navy SEAL, it stated that during a crisis, we don't rise to the level of our expectations, but we fall back to the level of our training. And I realized that slogging through years of training in my life helped me to be my part efficiently as a team player on that particular day and over the next course of the next few days in ICU. So this is actually a success story which I would like to share, because I'm sure that many of my colleagues across the world would have had such similar stories in their encounter against COVID pandemic.
Again, this is all during the COVID. You're treating patients during the pandemic at the hospital.
It was in March 2020. Yes, exactly.
Right. Okay. Oh, I thought you were going into another story.
I think this is one particular example which actually is actually a fitting tribute. I have other success stories, but I think this one underlines the point very much.
That must have been a real amazing time to be a physician in a hospital. Was your hospital overloaded with patients, COVID patients? As we heard, it seemed to me the hospitals were running out of beds. Is that right? Did you experience that?
Yeah, exactly. So the hospitals were running out of beds. We had to create extra beds. We had to create a rehab ward, which was actually a ward to house patients who need undergoing rehabilitation therapy. That was actually changed into a major inpatient medical ward. A new ward was actually opened, and it was actually converted to an ICU. And we had to import ventilator machines at short notice and equip all the ICUs with ventilator machines. A post-operative ward was used as a step-down unit in ICU. So the number of beds were actually increased. So it was actually mind-blowing, and it was unprecedented. And I hope that such a situation doesn't happen again in the future.
You know, I was just going to ask you, if that kind of thing happened again, have you learned things now what would you do differently in the treatment of patients than you did, during COVID?
Okay, so
what about that?
Okay, now the only how do we actually tackle if such a pandemic were to happen previously as to what happened in COVID? So the main important aspect to learn is to be prepared. So anything can actually happen at any point of time, and the best way is actually to be prepared. And how do we get prepared? So we analyze the facts of what happened during COVID pandemic. We identify who are the people who are actually affected during the COVID pandemic. So there were the case fatality rate in the United States was about 1.1%, which meant that out of 100 people who had the infection, 1% died. Now, the total number of people who died in the United States was about 1.1 million. Now, this mortality was not uniform. The chance of death was higher in patients who had certain disease conditions. And this is where I actually felt my large database analysis comes into picture, and the results of so many other database analysis also comes into picture, because these database analysis helps to identify who are the high-risk patients for whom there should be specific healthcare measures implemented to prevent them from getting affected, because those are patients who have higher risk of hospitalization and higher chance of actually having a death. Now, from my analysis, from my point of view, I can say that from my analysis that certain patients who had asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, certain liver conditions like alcoholic liver disease, liver cirrhosis, and fatty liver, and patients who had chronic kidney disease and patients on dialysis had higher incidence of hospitalization and death. Therefore, patients with these comorbid conditions constitute high-risk groups who must be the target of intervention. So if another future pandemic were to happen, these patients should be placed under isolation, under stricter guidelines. And there also has to be lifestyle modifications which has to be implemented in these patients, and proper compliance with the medications which has to happen at a primary care level. All these things has to happen, and at the same time, this has to happen at the community level, but they also has to have a national level. We need to come up with pandemic plans and disease response outbreak response systems, so that how we are going to tackle with pandemics if it had to happen in the future. So being prepared.
Let's hope we're done.
Yeah, being prepared and implementing strategies, identifying high-risk groups, and mitigating risk, I think this is the way to actually tackle any future pandemics.
Do you think everybody wearing masks was a big help? Was it worth it or not necessarily?
Definitely, it was actually helpful, because the reason is
it was okay.
So wearing a N95 was actually the most protective, but wearing a surgical mask also was actually very helpful. And one of the reasons why New York, after having a huge COVID surge during the initial wave, pretty much had a blunted second wave, and pretty much there was no third wave, was because of the fact that patients were actually very compliant with the masks and were practicing social distancing measures very effectively. So masks definitely made a difference in the preventing the spread of COVID infections.
Well, I'm sure that was an amazing experience for you to go through, having arrived here in the United States, you know, not too long before COVID erupted here, and of course around the world as well. Let me ask a little bit about what you're working on right now. Is there any? Are you analyzing data to discover some other, you know, some other things that could be very helpful to the field of medicine right now? If so, what, you know, could you share a little bit of it?
So at this point of time, I'm actually analyzing large data. So let me explain what is large data. Now, when we get healthcare data from single hospital, it's called a single center data. When we get it from a group of hospitals, it is called a region-based data. Now, when we talk about big data, what we mean is that healthcare data from every hospital across the length and breadth of the United States is pooled and collected. This national database, which has millions and millions of healthcare data, becomes the source of analysis. When we analyze this big database, we can see the trend for the entire nation, and these trends become crucial in addressing healthcare problems by identifying high-risk groups, implementing strategies, and modifying a management approach and bring out solutions at a national level. So as I had actually done my analysis on National Patient Sample Database to determine the impact of COVID-19 pandemic in the United States, I tried to continue my large database analysis, venture out into other database analysis like National Readmission Database, National Emergency Database to identify more healthcare problems and come up with solutions. And I'm also planning to embark on systemic reviews and meta-analysis. These are all finer forms of data analysis. And I'm also inclined to participate in clinical trials in the future to identify solutions to healthcare problems. But it's going to be a few years down the lane. So I have plans to continue my research for the rest of my lifetime. So research is something which I'm going to be devoted for the rest of my lifetime.
Well, that sounds really great. I'm interested to know, you know, you started in India, then you went to Australia, now you've come to New York. Do you have any plans to go anywhere else to study or to, you know, to practice? Or is New York kind of it for you? Is that,
not,
you know, that's the Big Apple? What?
No, the thing is, like, I actually, when I had an opportunity to start in New York, I realized that I've actually come to the my favorite destination. So I was hoping to start my career in the United States in some place, but I never knew that I would actually start in New York, which is where I actually ultimately wanted to end up. So I don't think so I'll be moving away from New York for a very long period of time. If at all, I'll have to move within the United States, but probably I think United States is going to be my destination, and I'm going to stay here and carry out my work, both my clinical and my research activities. I hope that down the lane, I will actually get back to my mission, which is actually to become a physician scientist, where I can actually continue to contribute to healthcare problems.
Thank you so much. We're so glad to have had this opportunity to chat with you a little bit. Dr. Antony Amarai-Raj has been our guest for this half hour, and we love chatting with you. Keep up the good work and keep up your research and discovering things and help your patients, okay? Good luck to you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us, Doctor.
Thanks so much, Doctor.
It's been great.
Thank you.
So welcome. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.